Well, hey, my name is Chris, one of the pastors here at Crosspoint, and it is so good to have you here as we are kicking off the Christmas season here at Crosspoint. And as Mark and Brad were saying, today is the day to return your Giving Tree gifts unwrapped with the tag attached. Make sure to drop those off. We'll be here until noon today, Sunday, the 29th. So bring those Giving Tree gifts back. Before we jump in, let me pray for us. God, I want to thank you just right now for your continued hope that you bring into each and every one of our stories. God, I know this has been a year unlike anything that we've ever seen, and yet Christmas still comes every single year. God, I'm so grateful for the gift and the hope that we have in that new Christmas season. We love you. Amen. Well, hey, welcome to Crosspoint. Welcome to the Christmas season here. And who am I kidding? I mean, let's be honest, right? Christmas started like 2 months ago, right? I mean, we all needed a little Christmas, and we've needed it for a while now. And so doesn't it seem like the Christmas lights in your neighborhood have gone up a little bit earlier this year? I mean, heck, our friends at the Christmas station here, B105.7, I feel like they flipped the switch on the Christmas station a little bit earlier this year. And it's because we all need it. We all need that dose of hope that comes each and every year with the Christmas season. Now, I'm sure there are some of you that fall into this category of, you know, Thanksgiving, it comes before Christmas. And okay. I mean, if you look at a calendar, yeah, it does, but I think you're missing something. And you probably get a little heated when you tell people, when you make this argument that Thanksgiving has to come before Christmas. But I'd like to settle this once and for all. Check this out.
I have a note for anyone that says you cannot celebrate Christmas this early. Number one, it is about Jesus' birth. You can celebrate Jesus' birth all year long. Number two, eggnog, hot apple cider, hot chocolate, glorious, lovely. Number three, Thanksgiving. So I've heard people say that you cannot celebrate Christmas, take a break for Thanksgiving, and then go back to Christmas. But I would like to remind you that Jesus was alive, took a break for 3 days, and then went back to being alive. So I'm going to start celebrating Christmas on November 1st, take a break for Thanksgiving, and then go back into it. Ho, ho, ho!
Start celebrating Christmas November 1st, take a break for Thanksgiving, which we just did. And now we're back to Christmas, because ladies and gentlemen, it is the Christmas season here at Crosspoint. And you see, here's the thing. It seems like more than any year before, we really do all need a little Christmas. And so we decided to dig into that this year, here with this Christmas experience. And so from the stories of the first Christmas to those maybe modern day art forms of Kevin McAllister and Ralphie Parker and Clark Griswold, you see, Christmas, it's a story of perpetual hope. And I imagine if we were to compare notes of our Christmas experience as adults, they would probably look pretty different. But if we were to go back and compare notes of what our Christmases looked like when we were kids, I think we would see that our Christmas experiences were actually pretty similar when we were little kids. You guys, do you remember the countdown to Christmas? Do you remember being a kid and counting down? Maybe you had an advent calendar. We had an advent calendar on our pantry door, and you got to move it every day, and there was a piece of candy, and we fought over who got to have the piece of candy. I mean, just counting down, knowing that Christmas was coming in those few days right before Christmas. Do you remember this? Do you remember this being a kid and there's 2 days left, there's 3 days left, and it's agonizing. I mean, your heart is just racing. You know that it's coming. You know Santa's coming. You know something new is coming for you, and you just cannot wait. And then you become an adult. And then you hear from somebody on a stage like me that, hey, it's 4 weeks from Christmas right now, like today, like while you're sitting there at home on your couch. You got 4 weeks. What do? You panic. I mean, you absolutely panic, and there's just, your heart starts racing, but not the good kind of racing. Isn't that just weird? Like, what changes? You see, I think the great thing about Christmas, it was, and it still is today, that no matter how slow it goes, no matter how long it seems to take for Christmas to actually get here, there was always the promise of Christmas morning, wasn't there? During that time, we all probably did something in common as well, right? How many of you, and just be honest, and kids, if you're watching at home, you're sitting there on the couch with your parents, like this is a moment of honesty. And parents, this is a moment of amnesty, okay? You got me? You got me? Okay, this is what I want to do. How many of you, when you were a kid, would go and search for those Christmas presents hidden somewhere in the house? And everyone, you know, sitting at home, just, this is a moment of honesty. Remember, parents, a moment of amnesty. I mean, let's just be real about this. Okay. We've all been there before. I mean, we did it in my house. I mean, my parents, like, they hid them in the same spot. Like, it was just like, it was too easy. Okay, next question. How many of you not only looked for them, but how many of you found them? You see, in our house, like we found them. We knew where they were. They were in the same spot every single year. And the third question, this is the question for the rebels, okay? And kids, if you're sitting at home, I'm not advocating for you to lie, but, you know, like be aware of who your surroundings here, okay? So how many of you actually got them out and played with them before Christmas? Rebels in the house. Okay, we got some rebels. I'm sure there are some rebels sitting there on the couch with you. You see, for me, the agonizing thing, like I said, the agonizing thing about Christmas was I knew where the presents were. I mean, I knew exactly where they were. My parents, same place, same time, every single year, they were right there. But they were very strict about one thing. They said, if you find them, and we find out that you find them, they all go back. And so we didn't look, we never did, we never snooped. And then to top that all off, for me as a kid, we took the long 10-hour car ride north to Toronto every single year for Christmas. And those presents sat inches behind my head. I always sat in the back seat. Those presents were just inches behind me. I knew they were there, but it was like miles of a chasm between me and Christmas. And you may know this about the first Christmas, or maybe this is new information for you about the first Christmas, but for generations upon generations, there was always this handful or this group or this remnant of Jewish people that they waited every single day for the arrival, not of Santa, not of Christmas, but of a Messiah. You see, in every single generation, there was this group of people that lived their lives every single day in obedience to God's commands that the Messiah was going to come, that this long awaited for, this long promised Messiah might show up today. But unlike the certainty of Christmas, this went on for generation after generation and nothing happened. I mean, like 99.99% of these people, they died. I mean, nothing happened. They waited, and nothing ever came of it. They prayed, they waited, they remained faithful, and yet no Messiah. And while many of the Jews, they kind of went off and did their own things, and they abandoned their faith, and maybe they thought this was all just a myth, this was all just a fairy tale, but there was always this one group. There was always this one group that lived every single day of their lives as if it could be the day that the Messiah did show up. You see, today as we begin this Christmas series, I want to introduce you to two of those people. And we're going to be looking at a story in the book of Luke, Matthew, Mark, Luke. Luke was one of the authorized biographers of Jesus' life. He was one that he took incredible notes. He was a doctor, and so he's very meticulous in his note-taking. And so he was writing about the life of Jesus. And here's the thing, and this is why this is so relevant to us today, here in 2020. I mean, at some point, in your Christian experience, at some point in your life of following Jesus or following after Jesus, if you haven't already had this kind of experience, you will. And maybe this has been your experience since about March of 2020. Maybe this has been the experience that you've had many times over in your life. You see, at some point in our experience of seeking the kingdom, you'll find that God is so quiet. That God is so inactive, that God is seemingly silent. And there will be times in our lives where we'll look around and we'll say, man, why am I doing this? Why am I attending? Why am I serving? Why am I giving? Why am I even believing all of this? Why am I obeying? Why am I missing out? Why aren't I just moving in with him? Why am I not, you know, just taking the money and running? Like, am I just doing this because my parents taught me? Like, why am I doing this? And I think for a lot of us, you might even be in that place right now. You've probably spent some time this year in that space looking around wondering, like, if God is really active, if God is really aware, then like, why hasn't he done anything? Like, this year has been unlike anything we would have ever imagined. And you're looking around and you're wondering, like, God, are you here? Like, do you know what's happening? Do you see what's happening here on earth? And at some point in all of our lives, there are these seasons. Maybe there are years of our lives. There are certainly periods of our lives where in our attempts to be faithful and good Christian people, we look around and we ask the question, like, what am I even getting out of this? I mean, where is this thing even going? Is there really anything to this? If you've ever had that thought, if you've ever asked that question, maybe you're asking that question here today. You see, the Christmas story is for you. In fact, the Christmas story that's built around these two characters that we're going to dig into today, this Christmas story is your story, and it's my story. So here's how that story begins. There was this husband and wife named Zacharias and Elizabeth, and they were both born into the priestly line of the Jewish people, which basically means like they were preacher's kids, right? I mean, their dad was a pastor, and his dad was a pastor, and his dad was a pastor for generation upon generation. And they were basically just raised under this religious line of people that had always sought after God and followed after God. And it's right here in the midst of this that we begin to pick up some of the tension in their story. Check this out. This comes from Luke 1, verse 6. This is what it says. Both of them, speaking of Zechariah and Elizabeth, were righteous in the sight of God, observing all of the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly. Which basically in context, Luke, the writer, he's basically saying like, all right, if God's going to look at anybody on earth and be like, oh, yep, they're kind of checking all the boxes, he's looking at these two. Like, these are the two that they're doing all the things right. They were blameless. Like, if you were to send a private investigator, they're not finding anything. I mean, like, these two were on top of everything. And here's what's amazing about Zechariah and Elizabeth. You see, they were doing all of these things. Zechariah was a priest. They were doing all of these things as followers of God based on these promises that had been given over 2,000 years before they were even alive. I mean, we're talking 4,000 years from right now. These promises were given from God, and they are following after God based on these promises. These were promises that God had made to Abraham, and for the last 700 years, God had done nothing for the nation of Israel. And yet, these two, they got up day after day after day, expecting that maybe today is going to be the day when the Messiah is actually going to come. And again, there's no evidence that God is going to do any of that, and yet they're blameless. And so if you were to peer into their lives, if I were to peer into their lives, if I were to ask them a question or you were to ask them a question, you might start to wonder, like, all right, Zechariah, Elizabeth, all right, like, all this blameless, all this righteous stuff, like, you're just such good people, but how's that working out for you? You see, look at the next verse. It says, but they were childless because Elizabeth, she was not able to conceive. So let me get this straight. You're not just getting up day after day waiting for the Messiah, serving the temple, being good people, you know, missing out on all these opportunities. But not only is all of that true, but now this God that you are so faithful to leaves you without an heir, leaves you without any kids. You see, in this cultural context, it was always the woman's fault. You see, in this culture, women, they always got the blame. It was never men. They didn't know. You see, all they knew was that a woman, she couldn't get pregnant. And as important as it is for a woman to get pregnant in our culture, I mean, in this culture, and I don't mean to be offensive about this, but in this culture, this was about all that a woman was good for. You see, they had no political standing. They generally couldn't work or get a job. They were almost always uneducated. And not only that, there was this religious stigma that God, he granted children to women, and God decided who would have a child and who wouldn't. And so for a woman to not be able to get pregnant, there was this sense in which that God had chosen to curse her for some unknown reason. And so Elizabeth, this righteous woman who had lived this blameless life before God throughout her young years and throughout her middle years and into her latter years of life, it just wasn't going to happen for her. In fact, look at how this statement ends. It says that they were both well advanced in years. This is a nice way of saying like, this is over. Like they're old. Like it was too late. God hadn't done anything for them lately. And we find out later in their story that they had prayed, that the desperate prayers of a couple that is longing for a child. And if this story, if you're sitting at home and this story hits a little too close to the heart today, know that I understand. You see, my wife Hannah and I, we've been there before. And if that's your story, man, I'm so, so sorry. You see, Elizabeth, she lived with this shame and this pain all the way into her old age. And now here's what's so ridiculous about this. You see, their entire faithfulness to God, it was based on a promise that was made to Abraham 2,000 years before they were even alive. Not 2,000 years ago from like now, but like 4,000 years. Like we're talking centuries and centuries ago. God made these promises to Abraham. And here's what he said to Abraham. He's like, hey, Abraham, I'm going to make you into a great nation, which, okay, that did happen. And then he says, I'm going to bless you and make your name great. And if you're sitting at home on the couch, this is probably not the first time you've ever heard the name Abraham. So like, check, that one did happen. And then it's starts to break down just a little bit. You see, he says, and you will be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you. And for a while, well, that did happen. And then he said, and I will curse those who curse you. And to be honest, we're still trying to figure that one out. And then he said, and all peoples of the earth will be blessed through you, you being Abraham. All peoples will be blessed through Abraham. And so this was kind of the root idea of what the Jewish people believed, that there was something more for Israel. Because if you know this story, after God gave Abraham this promise, he finally had a son who had a son who had a bunch of sons, and then they went off to Egypt, and then they came back to the promised land, and then they became this great nation of Israel. And then there was David. And then there was this golden age of Israel through the king named Solomon. And then the things, they were incredible. I mean, if God was ever going to bless the world through the nation of Israel, it would have been right here with Solomon. And I'm sure that's what they all thought. But then it starts to fall apart. You see, the nation, it split into two. And then there were good kings, and then there were some bad kings, and then over and over and over again, the nation changed hands. Check this out. By the time we get to Zechariah and Elizabeth, the nation of Israel had changed hands 25 times. You see, the Syrians, they took them over, and then the Babylonians took them over, and then the Greeks took them over, and then the Romans took them over, and then it just kept going over and over. I mean, they didn't even have an army half of the time. They were exiled for up to 70 years at one point. I mean, the nation of Israel, to be honest, like, they became less and less a factor on the world stage. They had no possibility of blessing the entire world. You see, the idea that somehow this little nation in this dusty part of the Roman Empire would bless the world? I mean, come on. It couldn't happen. And then finally, to add insult to injury, in 65 BC, this guy named Pompey, and he was this Roman general, it was kind of a big deal. He marched into Jerusalem, became another conqueror coming into the city. He pushed right past the temple guards, right into the temple, right past the priests, into the Holy of Holies. I mean, you didn't do this. Like, no one did this. Only one time a year, one priest would enter into the Holy of Holies. This is where they believed that God's presence dwelt. You see, they thought if you were to go in unannounced and uninvited, you would be struck dead. And then Pompey walked right out. And he looked around, and nothing happened to him. And word spread all throughout Jerusalem, and the implications, they were clear. Like Jupiter, the god of the Romans, he's got to be more powerful than Yahweh. I mean, there's just, it has to be. And you see, Zechariah at this point, he was a little boy when this happened. No doubt his father, just like Elizabeth's father, probably came home that day. And I'm sure they both remembered the day their father came home from the temple and tore their robes because the temple had been desecrated. And yet, this little boy, Zechariah, with that in his background, still went into the priesthood. Still decided that he was going to serve this God that still had not shown up 700 years later. And Elizabeth would continue to serve God her entire life. They remembered this story. They remembered the emotion of why is God not acting on our behalf? And what about the promises to Abraham and the whole world being blessed through this tiny little nation? And it was during this time that many, many Jews, they turned their back on the God of Israel. They integrated into Greek life and Roman life because it was over. But not everybody. Not Zechariah, not Elizabeth. You see, if you would have come to them at this time, if I were to come to them at this time and whisper to them like, hey, guys, it's over. Like this is just a myth. Like it's not going to happen. It can't happen. Do you not look around? It can't happen. We can't bless the whole world. Nothing will ever come of this nation. Just give it up. Walk away. You see, if we would have whispered that into their ears during these difficult years of their life, during these difficult years for the nation of Israel, you see, we would have been wrong. Because the reason that Luke begins the story of Christmas with their story, and the reason that we're beginning this Christmas season with this story, is because this was the beginning of something brand new. You see, the reason this story is so important, the reason this is so important to you and so important to me, is because there are moments in our life, there are periods in our life, there are seasons of our lives where we wonder, is God active? Is God even listening? Is God aware? Does God even know what's happening here? And on Christmas, you see, the answer is a resounding yes. You see, here's how the story goes. Zechariah was a part of this priestly order, and there were essentially 23 groups of priests, and they cast lots. They basically gambled to decide who would go into the temple to burn incense at the altar. And Zechariah, he's chosen, and this is like a once-in-a-lifetime chance for one of these priests to go in and to burn this inside of the temple where God dwells. You see, everybody clears out. It's just Zechariah right there in the temple, just outside of the Holy of Holies. He's in there. He's just kind of doing his thing. You know, another day in the life of a priest, you know, just kind of going about his business. And suddenly, an angel appears to him. Check out what it says. It says, when Zechariah saw him, he was startled and he was gripped with fear. But the angel said to him, he said, hey, don't be afraid. And this is so awesome. This is exactly what the angel says. He says, listen, your prayer has been heard. I would like to hear that sometime, wouldn't you? Not that your prayer is going to be answered. I would just like the confirmation every once in a while. I would just like to know, wouldn't you sometimes, that God actually heard your prayer. Like this year, 2020, maybe you've lost a source of income in your house. Maybe one of your family members has gotten sick. Maybe someone that you know has passed away. Maybe you've been longing to see a parent, longing to see a grandparent again, longing for a sense of normalcy, a sense of peace, a sense of comfort, a sense that this isn't going to last forever. And what if this year, what if right now, God were to just whisper to you, like this angel says to Zechariah, what if he were to just say, Chris, Chris, I've heard your prayer. John, hey, I've heard your prayer. Natalie, hey, it's okay. I've heard your prayer. I mean, that would be enough, wouldn't it? Just to know that he heard you. The story goes on. It says, your prayer has been heard. Your wife, Elizabeth, will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. And John is going to become this famous John, maybe a John you've heard of sitting there at home. John the Baptist. You see, this is how the whole story begins. But then it continues on in 66. It says, many of the people of Israel will he bring back to the Lord their God. And you might be asking, like, why has he got to bring them back? Like, why does John have to bring these people back to God? It's because so many had abandoned the Lord their God. And they had good reason to do so. You see, God hadn't done anything for them lately. I mean, it had been over 700 years. They thought it was over. I mean, it was fun while it lasted, but this is just a myth. And then Zechariah, he pipes up in this moment. I mean, can you imagine being in the presence of an angel inside of the temple and feeling like you had something to say? I mean, I can't imagine the gall of Zechariah in this moment. He's like, all right, Gabriel, was it? It was Gabriel? Okay, cool. Like, how can I be sure of this? Now, listen, he gets very diplomatic right here, guys. And I want you to take note of this because you should be aware of this. Like, he gets very diplomatic. This is what he says. He's like, look, I'm an old man. And my wife, well, she's well along in years. You see, you've got to love the Bible, right? You see, Zechariah, he's no dummy here, right, guys? I mean, he's like, look, angel, I'm old, and my wife, well, she's well along in years. In other words, he's like, listen, okay, I'm with you. I'm so glad that you heard our prayers. I'm so glad you showed up, that you're talking to me. But dude, you're a little late. You see, we've been praying since we were in our 20s. We've been praying since we were in our 30s. We even went ahead and, for the heck of it, just prayed through our 40s as well. We almost stopped praying in our 50s. Like, look, I'm old. My wife's old. I think you missed the cut. And the angel, he said to him, and I love this. I mean, he's like, what do you mean? How do you know what's going to happen? Like, I'm Gabriel. I'm an angel. You're standing here talking to an angel and you're wondering how in the world this is going to happen? Check out what it says. And now you will be silent and not be able to speak until the day that this happens because you didn't believe my words, which will come true at their appointed time. And you read that, and I'm sure that Zechariah heard this, and in this moment, it's like, wait, at their appointed time? Like, wait, you mean that God had this day marked down on his calendar? You mean that all of these 700 years of silence from God, that he was up to something here? You mean every single time that we were conquered and passed from one group of people to another, every time a new conqueror came into town, we fell in tow? That God has been planning this all along? There was this appointed time. You mean God, he hasn't quit paying attention to us? That he has not only heard my prayers, but he's heard the prayers of his people for generations? You mean even though God has been so quiet, that he hasn't been inactive? That he hasn't lost interest in us? The story goes on to tell us that the guys outside, the priests outside are wondering, like, Zechariah, like, this is like a 10-minute thing. Like, where's he at? And then he finally comes out, and it's like someone hit the mute button, just like the angel said. He's unable to speak. And he heads home, and his wife, Elizabeth, she becomes pregnant just like the angel told him that she would. And check out what she says. She says, the Lord has done this for me. But you see, that was just the warm-up act. This is just the appetizer to the story. This was just the evidence that God was gearing up to do what God had planned to do all along. You see, he was planning to do what those who had remained faithful generation after generation, who passed it on to their children, this hope that the Messiah would come, that God may be silent right now, but God is still active. You see, because here's the thing that we see. You see, God, he keeps his promises. And in every generation, there was this remnant of children, this remnant of people, this group of people that hung on to it, that hung on to the promises of God. And finally, the day had come when God would put into action this plan that he had had all the way back to Abraham, that every nation on earth would be blessed through the nation of Israel. And here's how this story concludes, and here's how our next story continues. 26 and 27. In the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph. The virgin's name was Mary. And in 2020, this is the story that we need. This is the hope that we've been longing for. And maybe for you, this is the story that has eluded you because you found yourself wandering. You found yourself asking questions and looking around, asking, God, are you even here? Are you even active? Are you even aware of what's happening here? You see, this is our story, isn't it? This is our dilemma. Do we stay or do we go? Do we believe or do we stop? Do we serve or we just go on to do something else? Do we stay engaged? Do we stay in that marriage or do we just do what everybody else is doing? Do we do that shady business deal or do we just continue to maintain our integrity even when it seems like no one else is? And maybe you're a student sitting at home watching right now and you wonder, like, why don't I just do what everybody else is doing? Like they don't get caught. Why don't I just go on and do it? Like, I'm not going to get caught either, right? But you see, in every generation, there was this remnant of Jesus followers that decide whether or not they're going to remain faithful in spite of the fact that they see God do seemingly nothing for them in the meantime. And the good news is this. If that's your situation, there is nothing wrong with you. If that's your situation, welcome to the common experience of those who place their faith in Jesus and have decided to follow him in spite of what they see around them. Welcome to the world of Zechariah and the world of Elizabeth, a couple that decided they're going to continue to walk blamelessly before God in spite of what they saw, in spite of what people said, in spite of the fact that they couldn't even imagine that God would ever give them a child. See, that's the dilemma that all of us will face. Or maybe you're facing right now. And the good news is it's normal. But the challenge is, will you be a part of that remnant? You see, the challenge is, will you be that unique student? Will you be that unique teenager, that unique college student, that unique couple that decides that we're going to battle this thing out? We're not walking away. Because at the end of the day, I want to know that I have given everything that I can. And the story of Christmas, it's a reminder. It's a reminder that your faith in God, it's not misplaced. It's a reminder that even when God is silent, God is not necessarily still. And when it seems like maybe he is still, he's not uninterested. And even when you've convinced yourself that he is uninterested, it has nothing to do with his plan for the world and his plan for you. See, the story of Christmas is a reminder that God can do anything that he chooses to do. It's a reminder that God pays attention, that he's moved by, and he's blessed by those who remain faithful to him. But best of all, the story of Christmas is a reminder that your faith and your hope is not in vain. a song that we love to sing around this time of the year, Oh Holy Night. It was written a long, long time ago. The lyrics, they were actually written by this French poet. And there's this line in a song that I just love, and I think it captures the idea of this today. It says, long lay the world. Long lay the world for hundreds and hundreds of years. Long lay the world in sin and error. And here's a word we don't use all that often anymore, pining, which means longing, praying, waiting. And Christmas is a reminder that our longing, that our waiting, that our agonizing, it's not in vain. That your faith in God, it's not misplaced. That God is the God who keeps his promises. Even when it seems like his promises are absolutely impossible to keep.